Thank you. Thank you very much. And you are listening to Run As Radio. This is Richard Campbell up here in Vancouver, British Columbia, with my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, Richard. How you doing?
I'm good. How's Portland?
It's just fine. Actually, today, rare sight of sights. The sun is out and there's clouds in the sky, but the sun is actually hitting the ground.
And you've been running all over the country, too. What, just back from Columbus?
Columbus, Ohio. Been spending a lot of time crossing back and forth across the country, and that makes for an interesting schedule. But it's really a pretty big part of my job is getting out and seeing a lot of different people.
Well, and you're in the banking industry. You got to talk to banks. What else is there in Columbus except banks?
There's a lot of great stuff in Columbus. Don't put me on the spot there. There's banks. There's certainly banks. You know, the one thing I really appreciated about Columbus and my visit there is they're really terrific people. And, you know, it's always a nice town. And every time I go there, I always appreciate the some of the things to do. And it's really quite a bustling town with a lot of really nice places.
Until football games are on, you've got to go to the football game. There's nothing else going on when there's football.
That's what pretty much everybody tells me.
All right. Well, we've finally got some technical glitches straightened out. The website's looking better, and we're on the banners properly for Run As now. And the email address at last is working.
Right. So if you have questions or thoughts or concerns or ideas, then give us a shout out, info@runasradio.com. We'll be glad to hear from you, and we may even read some emails on the air, as they say, and we'd really like to hear from you.
Yeah, let us know if we're doing the right things here, if we're hitting the issues that are important to you. Speaking of that, let's get to our guest. Dana Epp is Scorpion Software Corporation's founder and CEO, researches software security, and sets the vision in the convergence of information security principles and practices with digital information asset protection for business. As a security software architect, Mr. Epp has spent the last 15 years focusing on computer programming with a particular emphasis on security engineering to offer a safer computing environment for business. Mr. Epp has been an instructor in the Computer Information Systems Department at the University College of the Fraser Valley and British Columbia Institute of Technology, teaching students about computer programming and information security. He has brought to market various computer security products, including secure operating systems, firewalls, VPNs, and authentication devices. His latest research has been on hardening Microsoft-based operating systems and protecting information through host-based intrusion prevention systems. Mr. Epp has twice been awarded, 99 and 2000, the Community Spirit Award for Business in recognition of his ongoing initiatives in promoting high technology industries in his community, and won the 2001 Chamber of Commerce Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award. Mr. Epp is the author of Computer Security Concepts, Managing Business Threats in a Wired World, a book written to explain at the executive level how to handle the threats of online risk as companies move to the new digital economy. Dana?
Wow.
That's
a big bio.
So I
didn't write that one. You know,
no,
let's shorten it down, because I know you're going to make lots of fun of that.
And I realized, I suddenly realized I got in the middle of that thing. The whole Mr. Epp thing, you'd never write that.
No. No. I am me. I'm a computer engineering geek that has a focus on security. I enjoy and have a passion for doing that for small business, and my goal is obviously to build the best and safest software to allow businesses to get their workflow working.
But you really did write a book.
I did.
And you've done work at UCFV and BCIT. Of course, we're both in BC, right? So,
yep.
I mean, we're virtually neighbors. You're a little ways away from me, but not by much.
Yep.
That is Microsoft guys wrote that bio. That's the truth.
I'm not sure if it was Microsoft or who it was, but I know that there was one of those things that you got to make me sound professional, right?
I got it from the Security Hardening for Small Business Server 2003 event information.
Oh, yeah, that would be a Microsoft thing.
There you go. So I think Microsoft guys wrote that. It shows.
Well, it just means that I got to get some better ones that are just more in tune with the real world.
Well, you're so busy. I was just glad we were able to get an opportunity to talk to you.
And, hey, no problem. And I apologize that we didn't get started earlier there. Just, you know, business gets in the way, and you know, making sure customers are protected is number one. But this is always fun too. So I'm hoping we can get started and have an interesting conversation.
And we started chatting about Card Space and OpenID and a bunch of other technologies at the MVP Summit. And I just knew I really wanted to put this onto the show.
Okay.
So let's start at the beginning. And I know, Greg, you're a Card Space guy too. So
that's true. We are.
I may just get out of the way. Two Card Space guys in the same space, we're going to be in trouble.
You're going to have to, you may have to hold me back on this one a little bit. It's, you know, it's really interesting, the Card Space, and I, like you, work in the security field. My area is really financial services. I work for a company that does an awful lot of online banking software. And so Card Space is something that we got involved with, the company that I work at early on. In fact, before it was even called Card Space, in some of the early adopter. And we've already integrated and done a lot of demonstrations with Microsoft on that. Maybe I think there's a lot of people out there that would benefit from understanding where Card Space came from and what it's all about and what it means to the community.
Okay, well, that's actually a really good way to start when we're talking about Card Space. One of the interesting things before we even talk about the technology and everything about Card Space, let's talk about what the pain is, what the real problem is that even has Microsoft looking at this. Because, you know, Microsoft doesn't chase down anything unless there's a real value to their bottom line and at the same time solving customer pain points. And
right.
What we're talking about is passwords. Passwords in themselves are a very weak form of user authentication. And the reason that they're so weak is that anyone and everyone can gain access to those credentials by simply doing something as simple as social engineering through shoulder surfing or asking for it. It's kind of funny. There's actually some...
What's the name of your dog?
What's the name of your dog? Yeah. What's really funny is this guy went and took some Belgian chocolate, and they walked around in New York, and they said, hey, I'll give you this bar of chocolate if you'll give me one of your passwords. And the funny thing was, over 60% of the people they talked to got chocolate. And so think about that for a second, right? Is these people are willing to give it. And here's where it gets worse. As we have more and more of a digital convergence from everything, so we have our bank login, we have our user logins for our work, and we have our stuff at home, and we have our emails, we end up having more and more and more passwords. And Gartner Research says that on average, there's over 20 passwords that people have to remember. Well, no one's going to remember 20 different passwords, especially as it starts getting more complex, and you have password requirement policies that are saying things like, you need to have over 12 letters, and it has to have numbers and punctuation, and you can't use the same one for the last 20. Well, that gets too hard. So what are people doing? They're using the same password everywhere. And so it becomes an even bigger problem, because now when I've given you that bar of chocolate, if I can just go try probably 10 or 15 sites online, chances are I might log into one of those, and I can now act on your behalf. And that's where we start getting into a problem, because passwords have no way of identifying who's really at the keyboard at the point of time that they want to enter in their credentials to do something. So you know how Greg's talking about banking? Well, that becomes an even bigger problem, because, well, if I can log in as you, and I can facilitate some sort of banking transaction, that could be really, really bad. Now, on the flip side of that, though, what we get into the problem is that when we look at all the security paradigms, some people have what we call throwaway passwords. They're sites they really don't care about, right? It's, you know, they go to Pizza Hut and they say, come log on to our site and you get some free points. They probably don't care about those passwords as much. And so what ends up happening, though, is that they're just so used to using the same passwords, they put them on a site that's probably not as secured as a bank might be, and we start getting into these problems. And it's sometimes we call that risk-based authentication. It's like, we only want to authenticate and really be important sites. And if we could just do that, life would be a lot better. Because why do we need a password to be on Flickr? Or why do we need a password to be on, you know, some other site? And we start seeing systems like Passport as an example, where we can now have one piece of identity that allows us to log into 100 or 200 or 300 different sites. But the problem is, it's still tied to that same password credential. If someone can capture those credentials, I can now act as your behalf on all these different sites.
Right.
So now enters Card Space. And what the problem was is, and Bill Gates went to an RSA conference years ago and said, passwords are dead, let's deal with it. And what are we going to do? And it's actually kind of funny, because if we take a look at some of the quotes that Bill Gates has ever done, and, you know, there's all the funny ones about, you know, 640K will be enough. But the one that always got me was, passwords are not only weak, they are a huge problem in that the more you get of them, the worse it gets. And he says that at RSA, and people started thinking, going, yeah, he's right. You know, it's not Bill Gates talking at RSA. Well, you know, we take that as what we want to. But on the flip side of it, what ends up happening is, yeah, they're thinking about something. And what was the result of that? Well, what was called info cards, or and what's now called Card Space. And what that is that looking at the problem of this whole aspect of password credentials, if it be keyboard loggers, or they're going to be shoulder surfing, or what have you, or worse yet, they're just, you know, the yellow sticky notes put underneath the keyboard, because no one puts them on the monitor anymore because they were told that's bad. So they just hide them under the keyboard now. But the reality is what CardSpace gives us the ability to do is it's a new identity management system that allows you to control your privacy while accessing sites. Now, is it something for Windows login and that? No, not yet. But what it's designed to give you the ability to doing is having, there's two different kind of scenarios I like to talk about. And that is where you want to control your identity and your personal information when you connect up to some resource you may or may not trust. And then you'll have something where there is a vendor or client, a business or some sort that needs to be able to trust you. And it's something that's called self-issued cards and managed cards. And in a managed card, you might use a scenario as, let's say you go to your favorite website, like let's say it's a book selling site or maybe it's a shopping site, and you're a frequent user there. They might have an association with you and they know who you are, and they have the ability to issue you a card that belongs to you. And if we take a look at it, think about when you pull out your wallet from your back pocket or a woman pulls it out of her purse. How do they guarantee who's who in the zoo, right? They pull out their credentials. Their credentials are going to be their driver's license. They're going to be their loyalty card at the bay. It's going to be their MasterCard. And they might have some other types of cards, maybe their BCIT, a student card. And different locations might trust different credentials. So, like, if I go in and Dickhart has a really, really good presentation on Identity 2.0, which is the scenario of, you know, where are we going and what's going accomplished. And he uses the example of, let's say I'm going in to go buy a bottle of liquor in a liquor store. It's up to the liquor store guy to decide which credential he's going to trust when he asks me to prove my ID, right? So I might pull out my BC ID, and that might be enough. But will my BC ID be enough when I'm buying something in, let's say, oh, I don't know, Germany? They don't know what that credential is. It's up to them to make a decision if they wish to accept it or not. But what's nice about that is that I can decide what I'm going to present to them at that point in time. So when I go to a site like Flickr, as an example, if they have CardSpace support, I can say, I'm going to allow you to see this card. This is my personal identity card that I've created, and itself, it's got some certain information that I want you to have, such as, you know, my email address and my username, but you don't need any other stuff like my address and so forth, etc. You can have what are called optional credentials that you would provide to them. And so at the end of the day, what CardSpace does is it provides that facility to have a wallet. And you can have a wallet of different kind of credentials to allow you to log in. And then there's some whiz-bang technology in the back end that will allow you to communicate in a secure manner and provide that information that you need. So they can say, hey, you're at the bank, and as this is, you know, this is Van City Credit Union, you need to use your Van City identity card or your information card to log in here. And how'd you get that? Well, it was issued to you from some secure mechanism.
Now, that's different than you mentioned Passport a little while ago.
Yeah.
Very, very different. Passport, I don't have any control over what information is being sent by the Passport centralized service to some vendor or company.
Right. And the other part is that Passport's something that's stored in the cloud. So it's out in the internet, and it's managed by Microsoft at all times. And as you go and log into whatever site, if it's Passport enabled, it will go to the Microsoft servers and determine, hey, I need these credentials. Is this the right password? If it is, then, okay, give me all the information that belongs to Passport. Whereas with CardSpace, it's instead of it being handled in the cloud, it's actually handled at the location that you're at. And so when you go in and someone challenges you for a credential, you get your wallet pops up and you decide which credential you're willing to present to that site. And you have the option as part of that is that the technology in the back end says, hey, these are mandatory credentials, such as maybe your email address and your name, and maybe it's your age. Maybe you have to be able to prove what your age is, although, you know, that could easily be forged. But at the end of the day, what happens is that depending on the type of card that's being used, it can say, and here's some optional claims. So maybe to make life easier when registering into the system, you know, like what's your favorite color and whatever other information might be in there, your address and so forth. And what happens is that you are then in control of what information goes to that site. And better yet, it actually tells you, here's what's mandatory, here's what's optional. You decide what you want to provide to them.
Or at least you have that choice at that moment to say, no, I don't want to provide that information. I know what you're asking, and I'm not willing to give it to you.
Exactly. And in many cases, there might be the ability where, depending on what's there, you can issue different cards. So like I have for my CardSpace, my wallet, I have an online identity, which is what I would consider an anonymous identity, where sites I don't trust of anything, and that's got certain information that I can track from an auditing perspective. Like I use a special email address and so forth. And then I also have one for a more trusted site. I have a couple of managed ones that were issued to me. And what that gives me the ability of deciding is, well, which one am I going to provide, right? Which ones can I provide? Because Some identity providers aren't going to accept certain types of credentials, but at least I can decide what's there. And if they don't accept what I'm willing to provide to them, then we can we decide not to do that handshake, and we walk away from each other, and no one's the wiser. There's no personal information that's passed on. You go to Passport as an example. I actually just used Passport last night. I was booking a site, booking some airfare on Expedia, and there was Passport support there to take my credit card. Scared the hell out of me when I logged on because I haven't been on Expedia for a couple of years because I usually use a travel agent, and it had all my information right there and there. It was all pre-populated, stuff I didn't even want Expedia to have, but it was too late because I signed in as Passport, and it passed it on to Expedia. You know, Passport had a lot of failings, but the idea was sound, and that was the idea of, hey, we want to be able to have a single identity to be able to be used in multiple places. I don't want to have 50 passwords. I just want to use one. But where the failing is, in my view, and it is just my view, I know a lot of Microsoft people would disagree with me, but I think the biggest failing of Passport, besides the fact that Microsoft controls it and it's extremely expensive to get into the Passport clan, is the whole aspect of it's all controlled by a single password credential. So if I have a keylogger on site and I capture that credential, I've now got access to everything. And it's scary because if you think about all the access that I have as an MVP, my MSDN subscriptions and my MVP access and all my Beta Connect site stuff, if someone was able to get that credential, oh my God, the access that they would have and what I would be liable for under all my NDAs, I would be in a lot of trouble, which is why I'm yelling at them that they need to get card space and issue an MVP card. But that's another story.
So. You know, in the financial services industry, as we mentioned, there's a risk of having a financial transaction, executed on an account by a malicious person or by a fraudster, as we call them. But even beyond that, that's sort of a one-time occurrence. I mean, because if somebody was to, transfer or somehow take, $500 or $1,000 out of my bank account, for example, something that would be quite painful, but eventually I would recover from it. But the other real risk is identity theft.
Yeah.
And, that's the kind of thing that's very difficult to recover from. So when we're talking about identity and access management, in financial services, we quite often talk about the financial risk, but the bigger and probably longer term risk is really about, personal identity.
Well, yeah. And, it's the whole aspect of authentication across the gambit is kind of interesting because you have the end user who has their privacy concerns that needs to be dealt with. And in the scenario we're talking about here, the financial institution has their risks and everything. You have everything in between. Something I've never understood in this space is we can solve this with technology, but security is not a technology problem and it's a business one. And it really comes down to understanding the risks to the users and the risks to the businesses. As an example, when you're doing transactions like you're talking about, right? Logging in to go and see how much money you have in your account, that's a privacy issue. I don't want everyone to see. But to the bank, they probably don't care too much. But where the bank's going to care is that at the point where I transfer funds to another account, because are they liable or not? Who's at fault for that transaction occurring? And that's where I was talking about that risk-based authentication piece. It's like you might have something that says, look, we'll use a standard password for the user to log in to see their information. But any time that they want to make any changes or they want to take out money or they want to do something, we require another level of authentication. So it might be that we'll allow a password to log in to look at your account, but if you want to do any kind of transactions, you're going to need an info card to provide that transaction to occur.
And hearing you say that just warms the cockles of my heart because that's actually exactly the space that I operate in, and I have a team of developers that build software that does just that. So definitely agree and recognize the value and the risk. And the thing about risk assessment and risk management is that you notice it's not called risk abatement, right?
Yeah.
And one of the reasons people use online banking and Expedia and a variety of other, Amazon and other infrastructure, if you will, is because it's quick, it's easy, it's convenient, and it's there. A risk managed approach, I suppose, allows them to continue to be able to take advantage of the benefits of doing things online while still offering a reasonable level of protection.
Yeah, well, security is about risk mitigation, not risk avoidance. And so at the end of the day, when we take a look at everything that's going on, we have to try to understand what is acceptable to us. And what's interesting is those transactions have what's acceptable to both parties. So, what's acceptable is me as a user. Like, what am I willing to let the world see or let the world access? Whereas the bank might say something to the effect, or you know, the website that's doing a transaction say, what do I care about to protect my business? Because at the end of the day, all we really want to be able to do is exchange our transaction in whatever way we are, exchange to get access to that information, and know that it's the right parties doing that. And when we get online, we don't have that same thing, right? It becomes extremely easy to act as the identity on someone else's behalf without them knowing. And so if I can be a Russian a hacker that's been able to get your credit card information, which I can use on Amazon to make a purchase, which I will then transfer over to a buddy of mine that's in Canada, well, what ends up happening at the end of the day is that we have cross-jurisdiction issues in the world of the internet where laws are so slow to try to keep up, and at the end of the day, everyone just gets hurt by it and no one can win out of it. But what we're starting to see, and I think what's getting better, is we're starting to see people saying, okay, we get it. We know there's this problem. How are we going to manage it? So, you know, CardSpace is one of those steps forward, and it's nice because it's embedded directly into Vista. So anyone who's going forward has it built into their systems. You have the ability of actually downloading a secondary piece. EXP is an example. There's CardSpace selectors that are now been written for browsers on different platforms. So we see support now in Linux and in OS X for the Mac. And what's nice about that is it's just the start. And who really cares what the technology is going to be? Maybe Microsoft's going to win, maybe they won't. But the idea that people are now realizing that we have privacy concerns for the end user, and that the identity should be controlled by them and not by silos at the end, at the store, be it an online store or what have you, that's starting a mentality shift. And so as we start moving forward, and we can start using our digital identities to actually do more and more transactions, we're going to have more and more fraud and crime that's going to go, because of course criminals go where the money is. And so what our risk quotient will be and what we're willing to accept now is going to considerably change over the coming years, and technology is going to have to catch up. And so we're starting to see some of that, like OpenID. I know we talked about that at the beginning of the show here. Is here's a scenario where people are saying, you know what, when you're doing posts on blogs and you want to have access to certain types of sites, we might have the ability of being able to provide a single URL, as an example, as your identity. It's not a perfect solution because it's easy to spoof URLs and control the network data flow. And now people have come in like Kim Cameron, who stepped up and said, you know what, we can solve this. This is where CardSpace, in conjunction with OpenID, can support the mechanisms to provide the secure transaction to guarantee that you are who you say you are, and that URL is a trusted URL that you can take advantage of, and now we can use that technology that's in there. What's nice about that whole scenario is Microsoft didn't invent that technology. They've just been able to apply a one piece where they've seen that they've been able to add value in the wallet for the CardSpace, and deploy that out to then be used in other technology that we'll use in this case to be at the protocol layer to communicate to these different types of sites and allow for a login.
I think one of the really complicated things about, you know, matching up that people, process, and technology, those three portions of the pie, if you will, is that in order to meet those business needs, the technology quite often needs to retain a level of usability that doesn't ruin the experience.
That's
and
very true.
I think Microsoft has done a pretty good job with CardSpace, even in this initial release, in terms of doing that. Maybe you could discuss a little bit, you know, what is the experience like for an end user?
Well, I'll talk about the experience as I see it, and I see it probably a little different than let's say someone who's, you know, doing transactions from home. It's a mom and or a dad that's trying to deal with it. But the way I see it is, anytime I go to a site that is CardSpace enabled, it gives me the opportunity and it prompts me with my wallet, which is basically just a secure desktop which has a listing of the different types of credentials that I have in my wallet, what are called the information cards. Some will be managed, some will be self-issued, and I get to make a decision of which cards I wish to use to send to that identity provider. And the identity provider in this scenario ends up being that website I'm at. And I can then decide to select which one is there, and it's going to tell me, okay, here are the credentials it's asking for. And actually, I'm using the wrong terminology there. I'm sorry. It's not what credentials are they asking for. It's what claims are they asking for. It's saying, hey, I want your email address. I want your first name, your last name. I want to know your age. I want to know your address. And there's lots of different pieces of the claims that they can be asking for. And I can then decide which card I want to select. And when I select that one, it then gives me the option to review it to make sure which information I'm sending. So allows me to control from a privacy perspective what I'm willing to share with this site. And then it allows me to log in, and then it passes that on. What's nice about that scenario is I haven't had to enter in any password credentials to do that. Now, to be fair, I always have a PIN assigned to all my cards just because if for some dumb reason I didn't log off of my machine and I walked away, I don't want someone to sit on there and act as me by basically having my wallet and using that credential to show to other people.
Yeah, sure.
Which could be bad.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that laptop theft is still going to be an issue here.
Right, and that's where security is going to come into play, where you're going to use other pieces, right? So in the Vista world, we have the ability of using BitLocker, so we have an opportunity to lock down the hard drive so that people aren't going to be able to pull the drive out and get access to your card, because obviously if your cards are stored on disk, they're stored in a secure manner, but even still, if I can get access to the hard drive, am I going to have an opportunity to get access to it? With technology like BitLocker that's in Vista, I don't have those risks, because if they try to pull it out, it's not going to work. They need to have the TPM, or in my case, I use an external USB that stores the information. And what ends up happening is that they're not going to be able to get that. Security, you got to have a layered defense approach. So we want to secure it while it's on disk. So if my laptop goes away, I'm not going to fret about it as much. And then I have my pins that are on my cards to guarantee that if someone's there with an open session, that they're not going to gain it. And then, of course, they need to have the card as well to be able to provide the login facility.
You've mentioned self-issued cards and managed cards. So I don't know that we've gone into real detail about what the real differences are between that. A self-issued card would be one that I create for myself.
Yeah, well, when in card space, you have the ability in your wallet to create different cards, and the cards could have different personas. So in my case, like I was saying, I have basically an anonymous card, which has just got a bunch of what I would consider fluff. It's not that it's fake data, but I use my online handle and I use an email address that I consider a throwaway one that if I see I'm getting spam from that, I know that, hey, possibly my information was accessed from that site. I might not want to trust that site anymore. And so what ends up happening is that I can create those cards for myself, and when I go to these sites, I can use those cards to log in. Now, the site has a decision if they want to trust it or not. It's just a step above on the password side of things, because how do you really trust it and you know who's who in the zoo? On the flip side of it, you could have a managed card where, using other types of business process, the business can make a determination on how are you who you say you are and how can I guarantee that. And once I've made an association that I can trust, I can issue you a card and I'll store all the claims and all the information at the server. So basically the card just has, you know, like we have one for in our own office, we have a card that we've issued that's specific to access some certain information. We're just kind of testing the card space world on how that all works. And what's nice about that is that the server issues that card and I have it on my machine. I cannot log in from anyone else's machine unless I export my card and import it into their wallet to get access to that information. And what's nice is that the server, and I can revoke those access at the server side, and then that card's kind of useless to them. The analogy I like to use all the time when I'm talking to people about this is, imagine you have a loyalty card using stores. So like, you know, we're in BC here, so we have, you know, Save on Foods has their loyalty card where you get points every time you use it. It would be nice is if they could allow you to have an identity card, an information card that allows you to log in to Save on Foods, and it's tied to your actual physical card that you're always using too. So you could buy things online and you know that it's your card because they've issued you that card and there's that association. And now you don't have to worry about having your passwords. You don't have to worry about someone else logging in and using your points and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's probably not a site I'm going to visit that much, maybe once a year. So chances of me remembering my password is going to be pretty hard. But if I have my card, I just pull it out of my wallet when it's prompted, select that card, and then I go on, and you know, life works.
Now, one of the interesting things with managed cards that I noticed when we were working with it early on is, if it's a managed card that's issued by ABC Bank, for example, and I go and I visit other sites, then the ABC Bank card doesn't light up, if you will.
That's right.
It's grayed out.
What happens is a managed card is provided for their identity provider. So unless the other providers have technology in place that allows for the exchange of those type of credentials, you won't be able to see it. And what's kind of nice with CardSpace is that when you log in or you get prompted and your wallet comes up, the cards that it is willing to accept or that they believe is willing to accept are highlighted for you. And the ones that it expects that are going to be the ones that will be best suited for this site, they actually get provided first. So from a user experience point of view, it's just a couple of clicks, and normally you'll be able to select the first card that's highlighted there because it makes sense to you, depending on how you go. Now, we might get to a world where we end up having 20, 30 cards, and it might get a little more difficult, but none of us are there yet to really know if that user experience is going to change. But you're right, yeah, you go to a card, so like that Scorpion card that I have, no one else can use that card at any other site. They can't even issue those claims because the Scorpion server doesn't even talk to that identity provider, so they have no mechanisms to validate it or approve the identities to that. But that could change. As an example, imagine if the government of Canada decided to issue information cards, and that card might be able to be used at any government branch at any place. Well, those are various different websites that might exist. And they might have the ability of talking and working with other vendors, such as the passport office, or maybe with banks, where they're going to say, "Hey, if you can provide me your government information card, we'll use that as a claim we can trust." And so, as systems be able to start being able to trust each other from an identity provider point of view, we'll actually have the ability of having what I would consider stronger claims that come from sources we trust that we can use across the board.
In some ways, you've just abstracted the whole passport model. Right now, we're hubbed around Microsoft's information. The fact that we can have these third-party cards that other people can then trust means you can choose what pairing you want to make.
Correct.
That whole idea of affinity between these different groups is quite a powerful concept.
It is. And I think what we'll see is as they find better ways of managing this whole aspect of handling it, I think we're going to be able to start having our physical ability to have what I would consider a traveling wallet. Right now, in version one of card space, it's tied to the machine that you're at. And there is a way of exporting the cards and then importing them in, but it's not a clean way. And what I'd love to see is we come to a day and age where maybe it's being able to be cleanly stored on a smart card or on a USB key in a way that's trusted so that I can have a roaming identity. Like, you know, my own business, we build two-factor authentication systems. And the reason we do that is that things like CardSpace just aren't quite yet ready for doing things like Windows login or being able to have mobility so that I could go and use Richard's computer to log in to access my mail. That technology is just not quite there yet with CardSpace. But I bet you that the team at Microsoft, they've already got that all in their roadmap. And that version 2 and 3, as we start seeing them come in, will allow us to have that flexibility so that we can have that momentum and that ability to be mobile and still have this kind of strength in their card. So basically being allowed to carry our wallet everywhere we go.
And that sort of ties into a thought that that Greg and I were talking about before the show, which was the whole, when your laptop gets stolen, now what? How do you clean up from those cards, get them disabled? How do you even know what they are?
What happens when your wallet's stolen? What happens right now? You have to call up MasterCard and Visa and say, "Hey, I need you to revoke those cards, and I need you to send me new cards."
Right.
So you get the same scenario. Sometimes with the self-issued cards, I guess a little more different, but I also see there's other technologies that can be used here that Microsoft just hasn't tapped into. So if we take a look at the digital locker room as an example, you have the ability to store your EFS and BitLocker keys, your encryption keys basically in Vista. You can actually go store them up in the cloud now in a secure manner in something called the digital locker.
Right.
And what would be nice is if you could do the same thing with CardSpace.
Yeah, it makes
sense. I want a secure mechanism to store my wallet somewhere else so that if I need to get access to those cards, I can, and I can then make a decision if I need to revoke them or not.
And I'm not going to do it often enough that I'm going to make it easy for me to get to it.
Right.
So, you know, give me some difficult security obstacles to make that happen, because when I do need it, I really need it, and I need it to be secure when I don't need it.
Yep. And that's those things. If we go right back to where we started this whole conversation about how password security in itself is a very weak form of user authentication, that gets compounded when we start looking at everywhere we're going to. So, if we only go to a site we go to once a year, what's the chance we're going to remember that password? In this day and age, it's actually pretty easy, and I'll tell you why. The reason it's pretty easy is because they all use the same damn password on all 50 sites that they go to. But that's not the right way of dealing with our protection of these things. And so you have two ways of going about it. You have a really good forgot password link that you can manage to send back to those email addresses, or better yet, is that we're able to use a card that we can always issue, get challenged with later, and we'll have it when we need it.
Dana, we've gone around full circle nicely on, I think, the whole client side of CardSpace, and we've run out of time. I think we need another show to talk about the server side of CardSpace.
Hey,
how am I supposed to implement these things?
I think it'd be fun to do. Now, a lot of stuff that I'd be talking about, we will obviously have to, depending on when we do the show, we'll look at that, because some of the stuff, especially in Longhorn Server, there's some really neat, sexy stuff, and I'm not sure what we can talk about and what we can't yet, but I'll make sure we get that all cleared up before we do that next show.
Thanks very much, Dana.
No problem.
We'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.